Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters sitting in for Ben Kiefer today, live from the State House Law Library for this Legislative Monday. There are several measures before the Iowa legislature that would change the state's public assistance programs. We're talking about Medicaid. That's the state federal program for disabled and low-income Iowans, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. This was formerly referred to as food stamps. This hour, we'll talk about the proposals with lawmakers and an Iowan who grew up on food stamps. And with me for this entire hour, as she is every Legislative Monday, is our state government reporter here at IPR, Katarina Sestarek. Katarina, we're talking about four different bills here. Let's run through them. First one would change how often someone receiving public assistance would have to check in with the Department of Human Services. What do these changes look like?
Right. This one affects people who get Medicaid, food assistance, and needy families that get cash assistance as well. Officials with the Iowa Department of Human Services say they currently spend a lot of time verifying that these folks are still eligible once or twice a year, depending on the program. This bill would require them to check, and it requires participants to submit information at least four times a year, raising some concerns about whether the department is even capable of that and how much it would cost to do that.
Okay, let's go to this other one now that would add work requirements for some people on Medicaid. How would this be done?
It applies to people who get Medicaid through expansion, which by definition means they have some income of about $12,000 to $16,000 a year for a single person. They'd be required to work or volunteer 20 hours a week, and the state would have to get a waiver from the federal government to do that, which that the door to that was opened by the Trump administration.
Okay, similarly here, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, there's one that would add work requirements for that as well. What does this one look like too? This is the third one, just to keep it straight.
Yes. So people who are already exempt from work requirements under federal law, under Iowa law, would have to be involved in a workfare program. That's a federal term, and no one seems to be completely sure what that includes. It might be employment training or work or some kind of related program.
Okay, so this final one has to do with the SNAP program as well, but this relates to how people are cooperating with child support, I assume, child support payments.
Right. So a person receiving food assistance would have to make an effort to pay child support or cooperate with efforts to recover that money to keep getting food assistance.
Okay. So how would you just kind of explain overall the debate over these different bills? I mean, these are moving through subcommittees at various different movement through the legislature. What's the debate shaping up to be like?
I think it's worth noting that all four of these proposals were submitted by Opportunity Solutions Project, which is tied to a conservative think tank. They've submitted these proposals, and they're one of the few lobbying groups in favor of them, or at least vocally supporting them. Those who support these changes say they want to make sure that public assistance is narrowly tailored to those who need it, so that taxpayers aren't shouldering the cost for people who don't need it. And opponents say that these proposals are much more likely to take assistance away from people who need it than to eliminate actual fraud. And that a lot of people on assistance are already working, but that wages are low and they can't live without that assistance.
And certainly I've spent some time at the State House covering legislation in the past, and there's a lot that gets bogged down in just covering the way that policy is written. And sometimes we lose track just of people who are receiving these services. We're going to turn now to Jack Reardon to talk about how the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program in Medicaid has affected his life and his family's life. Jack joins me on the phone. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
So I just want you to talk a little bit about growing up with this kind of assistance. How long have you been receiving SNAP? Just tell me a little bit about how you've used the public assistance in the past.
Yeah, so I've grown up using things like SNAP for most of my life. Probably, I'm 21 now. I've probably been receiving SNAP since I was a little bit after the recession, so 2010, 2011. And, you know, it's helped in a lot of ways. It's the deciding factor between going hungry at night or being able to sit down and have dinner with my family. So, yeah.
And how big is your family?
I grew up with a single mom who are two or three jobs. And then I have two younger siblings that lived at home with us.
Okay, so, I mean, what would you do without this kind of program or without the SNAP program? I mean, just tell me how it affects your day-to-day life and what your life would be like if you did not have the assistance.
Yeah, so right now the amount of money we get each month for SNAP is essentially one grocery trip or one trip to the grocery store. So what it would do is just generally less food in the house and not having like the food that we need to do the things we need. So, I mean, a long time ago, it would have meant like I wouldn't have food and I wouldn't be able to study or spend time on schoolwork because I'd be sitting in the classroom worrying about being, you know, hungry. Or now, you know, if I don't have food, it gets in the way of work and, you know, my college studies.
Did you work through high school, just out of curiosity?
Yeah. I actually worked since I was like 15, all the way till I was a senior in high school, and I had like the same job.
And what kind of work were you doing, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I was working at Hy-Vee, and I was like in the the produce section, so I probably like worked like 25, 30 hours a week each week.
And you've had some time to hear from the debate that is taking place here at the State House. I mean, how do you feel that this kind of legislation would affect your life and your family?
Yeah, I was actually up at one of the subcommittee meetings, and it was really disheartening that people who are elected to take care of people in Iowa, and that's everybody in Iowa, including people who receive public assistance, it was so disheartening that they were like, you know, up there and at times laughing about the bill during the meeting and laughing about essentially taking food away from me and my family and from so many other people in Iowa that need this to help them get by. And it actually made me feel like physically sick.
And just going back to as far as your family goes, does your mother work too? I mean, I just to give a better understanding of the dynamic of your family and how you're getting by day to day.
Yeah, no, my mom works, you know, essentially three jobs, and then also like we dog sit to help pay bills.
In anything else just about how much money your SNAP benefits come out to per month? I mean, a way that you're able to budget this into your life?
Yeah, I'm not so sure necessarily about how we budget it. My mom handles that stuff more. But essentially, we get, you know, $180 a month for a family of four, which, like I said, is almost like a trip to the grocery store
And I think that there is oftentimes too kind of a conversation that takes place when you're talking about public assistance. What do you say to those who think that these benefits are for people who are maybe freeloading or lazy? I mean, do you feel like that a lot of times that gets mischaracterized in when you're discussing this with the general public?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't know if it's necessarily the general public or maybe, you know, a lot of people in power like to play that narrative. But like I said, my mom works three jobs, is one of the hardest working people I know. And I know so many other people who are on, you know, food assistance or other public programs that help them make ends meet that are like super hardworking. And it really is just like a narrative that like pits people against each other when we really should be like uniting to fight for a better world against, you know, big corporations that are taking wealth from our communities and hurting our communities.
And I'm curious, too. I mean, like, what is your end goal? What is you're in college right now? Is this something that you're hoping to not need in the future? And how are you making those decisions if that is the end goal?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, the end goal is like, you know, I want to get out and do something like a job that I care about. In terms of end goal, yeah, I would love to not have to, my family not to be on, right, on food stamps, right? I think most people who are on public assistance don't want to necessarily be on public assistance. But, you know, I do think in terms of like what do I want to see done with like the SNAP program or other forms of public assistance is that like we definitely need to like expand those programs. You know, like I said, we only get, you know, $180 a month. That's still not a lot. My family still struggles to make ends meet. We need to expand these programs and let more people in because there are a lot of people in Iowa who just need some extra help for no other reason than, you know, sometimes people fall down and they need help.
All right, Jack, thanks for calling in and taking some time to explain your situation. We really appreciate having those thoughts that you were able to bring to the table.
Yeah, thanks and have a great day.
What are you hearing, listeners? Is this something that you're concerned about, public assistance? Are you on Medicaid? Do you receive Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program support? Give us a call. Glad to take your call in the second half of the program, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Again, the number is 866-780-9100. Now, Katarina Sestarek, our state government reporter, you've had an opportunity to talk with somebody who's seeing this legislation kind of move through it, kind of the champion of it all. Set this up for us a little bit.
Yes, we'll hear now from Republican Senator Jason Schultz. He's sponsoring these proposals in the legislature, and I recorded an interview with him this morning. He was unable to join us live, and I started our conversation by asking him why he's making this a priority.
We're addressing a groundswell of demand that we try to expect some minimal standards from the people who are receiving public assistance. This isn't to say that people who are disabled, either mentally or physically, or are unable to contribute are being demanded, but there's definitely a wedge of our population who have found a way to get onto public benefits and not contribute back, either through a work program, a job, volunteering, doing something.
So you said that this whole effort is based on a perception among some Iowans that there's a lot of fraud in public assistance programs, and so this gives you an opportunity to find out if that's true. So through this process, have you found any evidence that there are a lot of people receiving these benefits who don't really need them?
I'm not sure. Well, there's a difference between fraud and people who are just signing up because they can. The fraud issue, I have come a long way in believing that there's not the amount of fraud that I believed there was to begin when I opened this whole subject last year. But I am pretty sure there's more fraud than what the defenders of the programs are claiming. So we're still going to plow forward and see if we can work along some of these eligibility verification programs and see if it makes any difference or not.
Opponents of these changes say that they're much more likely to kick people off public assistance programs who need them than to save money for the state by eliminating people who shouldn't be on them. What's your response to that?
Well, from my impression is that those same people would be against anything no matter what the bill did. In fact, I brought it up at one subcommittee. I suspect most of these people are actually in favor of a universal basic income. They just simply want resources handed to people who sign up for them, regardless of standards or eligibility checks. So a lot of what they say kind of sets me just a little bit. I realize I'm going to have to plow forward through a little bit of opposition that is just general in nature. But I've actually killed a couple bills already when it started to look like the case was that the wrong people were going to be affected. And by that, I mean people who need the benefits and wouldn't have the ability to meet the standards would be affected. And that's not the goal from the beginning. So we stopped a couple bills.
One of the bills that you stopped was for Medicaid work requirements. You didn't advance that out of a subcommittee because at the time you said you wanted to see more state data on how many people in that Medicaid expansion population are already working. Have you seen any of that data yet or gotten any updates on that?
Yes, we have. And we're locking down the definition of the population that the bill is supposed to target. From what we've seen, we have just under 170,000 Iowans in that Medicaid expansion population, the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. And it looks to me like only 45% of them are reporting earnings, which the flip side of that would be 55% are not reporting earnings. We need to dig down and find out, are they just simply not working, or are these the people that have exemptions protecting them? You know, whether they would be disabled in one manner or the other, or pregnant, or a direct caregiver of a loved one or a close relative. So we're going to measure the exemptions versus the remaining population in that universe, and just see if there's enough ground to be gained to continue going forward.
So even though you tabled that proposal before, is it fair to say you're still trying to push some form of that?
Oh, absolutely. We held off because I didn't have enough data. And now that we have a little more data and we are looking in different directions now, we very well may move forward with that with a new subcommittee.
Okay. Another bill that you had hasn't gotten through the full Senate Labor Committee yet was one that relates to food assistance and workfare requirements. Is that something you're still working on and hope to get through the funnel deadline next Friday, or is that one tabled?
I do hope to get through the funnel with that one. My understanding, the data we have so far, is that 89% of SNAP recipients are working already. That leaves 11%. We want to know, are these people who can't, or are they people who just won't? Other states that have done this have found quite a few people, as soon as you put the very first restriction on or the first requirement, they drop off. And these were healthy, able-bodied individuals. They didn't need the program. It was just too easy to get on. So we're looking to see if we can replicate some of that and move people back into jobs and see if we can move forward with that.
So on this show, we heard from an Iowan whose mom works 3 jobs and still needs food assistance to feed their family of 4. And according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, well over half of the food assistance participants in Iowa are in working families. How can the state help people who are already working get off those public assistance programs? And should that be addressed at the same time as what you're doing?
I believe it's already being addressed a lot. We have a ton of upskill programs, opportunities to get into work programs that would train people for higher paying jobs. It's already happening. I guess I can't say that it, of course it should happen at the same time, but actually it precedes any effort to look for people who are not working.
What about, there's been a push in the state for a higher minimum wage in some areas, and then the legislature took it back down to $7.25 in the areas that had planned to raise their minimum wage. Does that play a role in helping people get off public assistance?
Every time you raise the minimum wage, and some of those folks were going to go to ridiculous lengths, it was going to eliminate a lot of jobs, a lot of entry-level jobs, and a lot of opportunities to move up a job. So the effort to raise the wage and therefore lower the number of jobs available, and we're seeing this up in the Pacific Northwest where a lot of people are losing their jobs because the companies, the employers, can't cash flow with wages like that. So I would see resisting a $15 minimum wage as an effort to keep jobs available for people that were asking to go work.
Okay. And you also, I think, wanted more information about how expensive it would be to implement some of these bills that you're proposing, especially the one that would require additional oversight of people on public assistance programs, require them to report into the system more often. Did you receive any information about how much it would cost, and is it worth it?
No. No, I don't have that yet. Other states are doing it, so it implies that there is a savings to be had, or at least for the same amount of money, you get more through efficiency, more checks done, more eligibility. So I don't have that yet, but we're still going to look that direction.
Okay, and how much support is there among your fellow Republicans in the legislature for these proposals? Do you think they'll at least pass the Senate, or what do you think?
I think there's a lot of support. I think when we come home, we hear so many complaints, some founded, some not. I mean, there's a lot of misunderstandings about the programs, and that's part of why we're going through the subcommittee process committee to put some daylight, some sunshine on these policies, and let's talk about them publicly in front of the people of Iowa. And when we find a misunderstanding, we can set that aside and move forward to the next question. But I think a lot of Iowans want to see us address this.
What's the role of the federal government in these proposals?
Well, in almost all of these programs, these are actually federal programs administered by the state. So the federal government sends us the money, and then we are, in exchange for accepting the money, we are obliged to run the program. one of the frustrations we've run into is the amount of federal rules that kind of fence us in and hamstring us as far as what we can and can't do in administering the programs. One of my frustrations was to look down the path of photo ID for SNAP cards. I've spoken to law enforcement, in fact, did just last week after that subcommittee, where suspects, criminals, once they're charged, have multiple SNAP cards on them, meaning they either bought them or stole them from somebody and they're using them. I'd like to make sure that the benefits are at least being used by the household that qualifies, and yet the federal rules won't allow hardly anything in the way of verification of the person who's holding the SNAP card. So examples like that abound. So a lot of what we're doing in our subcommittees and going forward in research is simply to find out what we can do under federal rule.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Schultz.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this.
That was Senator Jason Schultz, a Republican from Schleswig. He's the chair of the Labor Committee and sponsor of these bills. That was him talking with my colleague, IPR's Katarina Sestarek. We're going to talk more about this issue in the second hour, but I want to get quick response from Senator Schultz's Democratic colleague, Pam Yoakum, who's sitting beside me here in the law library. Senator Yoakum, what are your thoughts here? And summarize in a minute. We'll be back for more. But
Certainly on the surface, a lot of these bills may sound good, but I can tell you that most people that are getting any kind of public assistance right now, they are already required to do all kinds of reporting, all kinds of eligibility requirements already. And to me, the more important thing is we really need to be focused. If you want to solve this problem and try and help more Iowans become financially independent, then we need to really be focused on making sure that we're doing employment and training, reliable transportation, child care assistance, food security. Those are the issues that are really going to make a difference in helping lift people out of poverty and off of these programs. And one way to do that is to close some tax loopholes.
Okay, we'll be back with more from Senator Yoakum, as well as a couple other guests who will join us as well. What are you thinking? Are you on SNAP? Do you receive any public assistance through Medicaid? Give us a call, 1-866. I've got to have the number in front of me, 1-866-780-9100, or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Again, 1-866-780-9100. We'll be back with more here on Legislative Monday. You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. We're live in the Iowa State House Law Library for this Legislative Monday. And there are several measures before the Iowa legislature that would change the state's public assistance programs. That's what we're talking about today, and specifically Medicaid, the state federal program for disabled and low-income Iowans, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP for shorthand. It was formerly called food stamps. Last half of the show, we talked about the bills with their sponsor, Republican Senator Jason Schultz of Schleswig, and ran through what they would do with IPR state government reporter Katarina Sestarek. We have some guests here with us we're going to bring into the conversation here in just a moment, but I do know we're getting some calls, and I want to take one of our callers here to start this half. Let's go to, we have Jim in Spencer. Jim, you're on River to River. What are your thoughts here? Jim from Spencer, are you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you, Jim. You have the floor.
Okay. I think we all need to be aware that at this point in time, the taxpayer is subsidizing all food in this country to the tune of about 50%, so that all of the meat and the produce and the dairy and the grains that are produced in this country are already being paid for by the federal government by half. So, you know, we're already recipients of a food subsidized program. It's just a matter of degrees.
And how closely are you paying attention to this debate here at the State House, and what do you think of it?
Well, I think that there are a lot of people in Iowa that are eligible for food stamps, but they're embarrassed to use them because we live in these small communities. And I think that there are a lot of people that they need assistance in ways that we're not delivering it. And if we think that we can just raise their skill so that they can earn more, someone is still going to take that position they just left, you see. So we really need to be paying people more. That's the problem. We don't pay people enough.
All right, Jim, thanks for your call. And if you have a question or a thought about the debate that's taking place about public assistance with the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or Medicaid, give us a call, 866-780-9100, or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Now I want to get to a few of our guests here that are joining me in the State House Law Library. First we go to Ann Disher with the Child and Family Policy Center. She's the executive director. Ann, have other states done similar measures like the ones that we're discussing here today?
Yeah, this is happening across the country, and I think Katerina made reference to some conservative organizations who are really pushing this kind of legislation across states. And in fact, we have some cautionary tales even on some of these bills from the kind of damage that they can do. Arkansas, I think, is one state that is already implementing some of the work reporting requirements that we've talked about. And since last August, about 18,000 people have been cut from the Medicaid rolls. And these, of the people who are complying, there's very little new work hours being reported, right? This isn't encouraging people to work. What it's doing is setting up obstacles that make it hard for people to comply. But because we know that most folks on Medicaid already are working, true of SNAP as well, some folks in this process, these subcommittees have talked about this as a solutions in search of problems. And I think there's some truth to that, but it kind of depends on how you define the problem. And I think the problem here is getting defined as folks getting public assistance and not working. I think that is that's the wrong premise. We know most, I think the question is, how is it that so many low-income working folks are eligible for public assistance? I think that's a different question, but it gets you to different policy solutions, and I think ones that could be much more beneficial for Iowans.
And the Child and Family Policy Center, can you kind of explain what your organization does and give us kind of an idea of the population that we're talking about that you're working with?
Sure. We're a nonprofit policy and advocacy shop. We are up here at the Capitol on behalf of kids and families. We do a lot of data analysis and collection as well. So we kind of keep tabs on some of the numbers around these programs. These are really important safety net programs for vulnerable Iowans. The SNAP program, just in January of 2019, new numbers, about 330,000 Iowans were participating in SNAP that month. We know about 70% of SNAP participants are in families with children. More than 54% are in working families. And as we heard from the earlier caller, the average SNAP benefit per person per meal is about $1.20 per meal. Likewise, Medicaid, which is actually even a larger program in scale, serves almost 800,000 Iowans at some point during the year. And again, the largest group of those are children, actually.
Pivot here to Drew Klein, who also joins us here in the State House Law Library. He's the State Director for Americans for Prosperity. This is a conservative organization founded by Charles and David Koch. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the legislation moving forward and why your organization is supporting this legislation.
Yeah, no, we've been supportive of this, not only in Iowa, but in several of our other state chapters, including states like Kansas and Arkansas that have implemented some of these. And the results really do speak for themselves. I mean, there's always going to be some spin that takes place around those numbers. But as you look at that, we want to continue to elevate the individual, and welfare should exist for those that need it, but it should be needed temporarily as much as possible. And so how we move those people back out of those programs, I think there's broad agreement on that being a goal, but removing those disincentives wherever they may be is part of a broader movement to be able to move people out of dependency back towards self-sufficiency, which I think is a shared goal. But certainly that this is part of a bigger process to be able to do that.
And do you hear from people? I know that Americans for Prosperity, they do some door knocking. Your organization tries to get out. Are you hearing from people that when you're knocking doors or talking with people? I mean, is this something that you're hearing widespread change for, or is this, where is the desire coming from?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We represent roughly 45,000 activists in the state of Iowa, and as part of that, not just the voices of those individuals, but also the narrative that we see playing out. We have essentially a negative unemployment rate in the state of Iowa. What we need to do something, and part of workforce development could feature these types of reforms that are encouraging people to go out and upskill and get improvements. When we look at the numbers from Arkansas, the folks that were moved out of welfare in the immediate years afterwards saw on average a 300% increase in their income. And so these are not just beneficial for the overall economy of the state, but for the individuals that are currently enrolled in those programs and that are hopefully, like we said before, moving towards self-sufficiency. So I think there's broad support, not just from the business community, but from activists. And when we look at the impact, I think this is something that we should all be able to support.
What about the argument, though, that these programs actually help people get ready to be in the workforce or support them as they're entering the workforce or they're in low-paying jobs?
Yeah, well, I think if we look at the work requirements, we continue to say work requirements. Some of those are actually job training skills as well that would help qualify for those things. So for individuals that are already working or as Jack called in earlier, going to school, those types of things still count towards eligibility requirements as well. And so, yeah, that's the goal. If you go take a welding class, we want to make sure that you're not penalized for doing that because we know that the outcome is going to be a greater ability to go out and provide for yourself and your family as well. And so I think that's reflected in the legislation well.
You know, the current programs really do require all of these kinds of measures in order to be eligible to begin with, to even get these services. And I think it's disingenuous to suggest they don't. This is really an effort to put new reporting requirements on people who, quite frankly, many times have a very difficult time navigating the system to begin with. And what we're really talking about is handing over to another private vendor some reporting mechanisms now, many of which I don't even think the Department of Human Services has a computer system that can actually handle all of this. We do know that some of these new programs, I've seen a fiscal note just on one of these bills, a $1.4 million increase will be required. And I don't think we're going to see anything new or different. If we're really serious about this, really serious about a rising tide lifts all boats, then you do something to improve the minimum wage. You do something to address the child care assistance and what we call the cliff effect. We do something to make sure there's reliable transportation, and we do something to make sure these folks are getting the employment and training they need to hold a better paying job.
And we're hearing right now from Senator Pam Yoakum, a Democrat from Dubuque.
Yes,
sorry,
I
didn't introduce
right
you. You jumped right in there. But Senator Yoakum, I brought it up to Drew earlier, that, you know, asking, are you hearing from people that there are these concerns? I mean, what are you hearing from constituents?
No, honestly, I am not hearing those same concerns. I think that this is, like Ann has said, it's a problem, looking for a solution, looking for a problem here. And I don't think anyone is going to deny that we need, that there is dignity in work and an opportunity and all of those kinds of values that we cherish in this state. But I don't believe that this is the right approach. I truly believe the right approach is reinvesting those dollars in areas that are going to really help families rise up. And I mentioned a little earlier a tax issue. It's Senate File 23. I wish more people would sign on to that and be as gung-ho and desirous to get that passed as some of the stuff we're talking about here today. And that is when you have a tax bill. I mean, one tax issue in this state, research activities, $70 million last year, and it went to a handful of corporations that are paying zero corporate income tax. If we would just close that down to $1 million refund each year instead of allowing one company to get $13 million written out to them from the taxpayer, that would go a long way in helping us to support some of these programs that we're talking about today to really start lift, that the tide would lift all boats. So I really believe that this is
not the right answer. And I've been through the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. I was intimately involved in its creation, along with Governor Governor Branstad.
So it's
and
2013.
His staff in yep. 2013. And what I do know is that about 47% of all Iowa employers currently offer health insurance to their employees. That's it. The Iowa Health and Wellness Plan actually helped 150,000 working Iowans get health insurance that never had it before, and has reduced uncompensated care and charity care that the hospitals and clinics and doctor's offices were providing. And quite frankly, in 2013, I remember vividly that the projections then were that those of us who were fortunate enough to have health insurance were spending about $1,000 a year more in insurance premiums to cover the cost of those who were showing up in the emergency room because they did not have health insurance. And they went to the emergency room for their health care.
I want to go to Katarina Sestark, our state government reporter here, quickly, and then we'll get to you, Drew, for a follow-up there.
Quick question for Senator Yoakum. Sure. I just want to have you respond to something that Senator Schultz said earlier. He said people who, some of the supporters of these, of not changing these programs would want a really want a universal basic income and don't want there to be any standards or requirements. Can you respond to that?
That is just a ridiculous statement. Of course I believe in the dignity of work. Of course I want to help people be able to have that dignity in work and help them be able to find a job that's going to support themselves and their families. So that is just a plain ridiculous statement.
Well, go to Drew Klein here with Americans for Prosperity for a chance to follow up on some of this.
Yeah, actually, Senator Yoakum and I agree on the problem that is the tax credit mess that the state of Iowa has. We may disagree on what the solution to that is, but overall, I do think that we have a problem with tax credits. But we shouldn't be so narrow in our focus to think that that's the only place that there are dollars available in the state budget. Again, when we look at the results from a place like Arkansas or Maine, for example, and we can compare based on the size of the population and the way that their economy looks, just an increased revenue from folks that started to participate in work requirements in Arkansas, they saw an estimated $2.3 million in increased revenue, just in tax revenue from folks that are increasing their pay and working more. They also see just $28 million a year in savings to the program itself. And so those are dollars that can then be reinvested into a lot of the things that we're talking about. The data from the Census Bureau and some of the states that have already implemented this tells us that we're looking at somewhere between 5 and 25% cost savings that's possible if we start to just do eligibility checks. Well, in the state of Iowa, where we're spending about $1.5 billion a year on welfare reform, that's $75 million to $370 million. I mean, it's a big window. Those are real dollars that can be used for some of those high-priority job training, skills training, education, those types of programs that I think we all agree could have a positive impact, but those dollars have to come from somewhere.
And you have a doubtful face on your expression seems to emit something otherwise. What are your thoughts on the figures that Drew is providing?
Well, I think there's ample evidence, even going back to, like, looking at welfare reform in the 1990s, mm-hmm. right, where they changed the nature of cash assistance. We, over time now, really have very few folks in our nation who get any kind of cash assistance. Yes, we have saved money on TANF, but we haven't changed poverty rates, right? Well, yes, we can stop giving people cash assistance, but now we have a whole growing population of folks who live on $2 a day, right? Like, and so, like, the economy is good right now. I think we could, in fact, you know, like, the SNAP rolls are going down already every month for, like, the last, I don't know, at least 2 years, the SNAP rolls go down because the economy is good. But just because we kick people of assistance doesn't mean we get them a living wage. And I think the administrative costs that we've seen in other states, and just from, like, Senator Yoakum mentioned, the one fiscal note on this one particular bill is going to require hiring lots of caseworkers, child support recovery folks, to administer a program where we know from other states it doesn't fundamentally change the amount of non-custodial parents paying child support. So I think the numbers on those, that is not a clear clear-cut story that we're going to save money out of this.
All right, let's seek the perspective from one of our callers. We only have limited time here, but Sarah in West Des Moines joins us. Sarah, what are your thoughts on this issue?
I'm concerned with the fact that already benefits are so low. I work with the homeless population here in Des Moines, and so many of them have a difficult time, as one of your other speakers said, navigating the system. And even if they do apply for benefits, they get maybe, you know, $16, $20 for the month. And that's not going to be solved by requiring them to work because, for the most part, if they're not working, and some of them are, if they're not working, it's because they're unable to, either due to a physical or mental disability or because of, you know, a trauma or something that has happened to them, you know, oftentimes in their childhood that's left them unable to cope with our modern workforce. And I don't want to see those people hurt any further than they already have been. So I would agree with the idea that, you know, not only do we need to, you know, provide a living wage to people, but we need to be improving our social safety nets and making sure that we have people there to catch folks before they end up losing their homes and losing their food and end up, you know, freezing and dying in the cold here.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. Senator Yoakam, mm-hmm. This is a very vulnerable population that we're talking about. I mean, are there other points to this conversation you think that are worth bringing up that have not been stressed thus far in the show?
I think we've done a pretty good job of stressing a lot of the major points in it. I guess I would just like to close by saying that I listened to Jim from Spencer call in and mention that how we have kind of demonized people because they have to they need these services and are actually ashamed at times to get it because we have demonized the programs. I listened to Jack, whose family relies a great deal on these programs in order to meet their health security or their food security in their own family. And of course, Sarah, who just called in. The point is that we're a better state than this, than demonizing people because they are of the working poor. And to try and say that because they need some assistance as working poor people or that they have a disability, somehow they're worth less. And I have a real problem with that whole concept. I truly believe that most people want to do right by themselves and their families, and they do believe in the dignity of work, and so do I.
Want to give a chance to our other guests to make some conclusion remarks. Drew, any thoughts to close out this hour?
Yeah, I take somewhat a different approach. I don't think that this is demonizing anything. I think again, we believe that there is a dignity with work, and we want to emphasize that. We want to hold that standard high. This also, we keep on going back to folks that are vulnerable that aren't impacted by these pieces of legislation. If they're already working, they're going to meet the work requirement. If they have a disability, they meet a different exemption that wouldn't apply. But I do want to, I guess, close just with this quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. It says, "Treat a man as he is and he will remain as he is. Treat a man as he could be and he will become what he should be." And I think that really captures what we're trying to do. Let's help people improve their lives, move towards self-sufficiency. That's really what these bills are about.
And give you a chance to conclude here as well.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing about these bills is I know people like to call them work requirements. What we call them is work reporting requirements, because for the most part, we are asking people to report activities they're already engaging in, but we are setting up obstacles, right? 25% of households in Iowa don't have broadband internet to do easy, like online reporting, which is what many states have wanted people to do. You know, we are a child advocacy organization primarily, and so some of these bills are more focused on adults. But we care about them because we know what family stability means for kids, and setting kids up for a good future means for the long-term success of our state. So I think we not only have these short-term goals, but it's really important to think about what do we do for families and kids looking forward to the next generation.
Okay, that's going to do it for today. Thanks to our guests, Senator Pam Yoakam, a Democrat from Dubuque, Drew Klein, State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Ann Disher, Executive Director of the Child and Family Policy Center. We also heard from Senator Jason Schultz, a Republican from Schleswig. Thanks also to IPR State Government Reporter Katarina Sestarik. Our producers are Lindsay Moon, Caitlin Harrop, and Emily Woodbury. We had production help from John Pemble. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.